Warning, the following podcast contains descriptions that some listeners may find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Any opinions expressed are all our own and do not in any way represent the opinions of where we work.
Hello, welcome to Mad or Bad.
My name's Rachel.
And I'm Neil. And this week we're going to be discussing the murder of Joanna Young.
Before we begin, I just want to say a massive thank you to our new Patreon supporters. We have three new supporters, so JT, Jess Plant and Emma Tranter. Thank you so much for supporting us.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
You mad bastards.
Okay, so this week we're going to be talking about the so far unsolved murder of 14-year-old Joanna Young in 1992. And this is actually a case that I do remember, although it's all this time on. I can actually remember because I think it was my first driving lesson on the day that she went missing. And I know that's a kind of weird thing to tie it up with, but I remember being on the driving lesson and the next day sort of hearing about this missing 14-year-old. And I remember on the driving lesson as well, the driving instructor always want the radio on, and I remember the Whitney Houston song "I Will Always Love You," which was I think number one for about 2 years, would be playing on this driving lesson, and I can remember that.
Can I just add though, who was your driving instructor? Because he didn't do a very good job.
He's done a fantastic job. And
My driving instructor only had four fingers on one hand.
Did he?
And he hit it with a glove.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
What, like Luke Skywalker?
I don't know.
Yeah. He had a false hand, didn't he?
He creeped me out though.
Did he? What? Yeah. Did he have all his brain intact?
I don't know.
Because that might account for some of your driving sometimes. Anyway, that'd be the examiner, wouldn't it? Anyway, so we'll go back to 1992, as I say, December the 23rd. And Joanna, she was 14 at the time, lived in a place called Watton in Norfolk with mum and dad and brother and sister. Apparently she really enjoyed drama at school and English, and she was described as a typical teenager.
So Watton is a market town, quite small in size, approximately 7,000 residents. It has grown in size since 1992, having, you know, a lot of housing developments since. It's approximately 20 miles from Norwich, and it's the largest city and the only city in the county of Norfolk, Eastern England. So it's quite a semi-rural area, a lot of farming. Poorly served by roads, no motorway at all in Norfolk. And as with many such small towns, there was a lot of underage drinking going on, a lot of drug use. And it has been described by police as a subculture. But that's what happens in small towns, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? Especially somewhere like... I've never been to Watton, I've been near it.
It sounds like somewhere from London.
In what respect?
I don't know, just the name.
No, it's you know, it's about, I think it's about 20 miles from Norwich.
Mm.
And I suppose all small towns like that. I mean, I remember growing up, you know, in a bigger place than Watton, but, you know, the underage drinking, it's kind of almost like a rite of passage thing, isn't it?
What did you used to call it? Like, was there a term for it?
Well, going out and getting pissed, really.
We used to call it bushing.
Is that not
because you're literally
else?
In a
no. Oh, okay.
You're literally in a bush drinking.
All right. You're just drinking in the bush, nothing else. Oh no, we never used to drink in a bush. We just used to drink at people's asses and then
go home.
Go in park or something and then
yeah, that's what it was though. You were in a park.
Yeah, but we didn't sit in a bush. I mean,
no, we didn't literally sit in a bush.
Oh right, okay.
But around a bush, maybe.
Oh. Okay. Back to December the 23rd, 1992. So Joanna had been seeing a 17-year-old lad, boy, a young man called Ryan for about 6 months. He lived in the village of, or small town of Watton. unbeknown to parents at the time, Ryan had ended the relationship a few days before. He said that, you know, he said after all this, all these events, that they'd been arguing a lot. But he didn't rule out, you know.
What do a 14 and a 17 year old have to argue about?
Yeah, well, it's
bills.
Yeah, bills and work and stress and strain.
So stressful.
Yeah, but you know what it's like though when you're that kind of
you
age.
You looked at that girl.
You say that to me now.
do I?
Yeah, no. No, but you know, emotions are very strong then, aren't they? And kind of everything's multiplied, isn't it? So, Mum and Dad didn't know that this relationship has ended. Maybe Joanna's friends knew, I don't know. So the morning of the 23rd of December, 92. So Joanna, she used to, obviously around a school, she used to work kind of part-time, just a few hours as and when, at this local family kind of taxi firm in Watton. And she used to do things like, you know, hoovering the taxis out, taking a few calls. She did a few hours that morning. She was on school holidays, of course, so she had more time. Being interviewed later, you know, the taxi owners, kind of a husband and wife, they didn't see anything, nothing untoward, just kind of happy-go-lucky, normal Joanna. We spin on, we're still on the 23rd, 7:30 at night. As I said, Neil's on his driving lesson in Derbyshire. And I do distinctly remember it being very, very, very foggy and very cold. And as it was in Watton. So 7:30, Joanna, she said to Mum and Dad, you know, is it okay if I just nip out for a bit? I think Dad said, yeah, you know, don't be late. And that was that. Off she goes with a coat on and off she goes. She walked about 1/2 mile to a local, it was described as like a local hangout place for teenagers. It was a gateway supermarket as it was then. Can you remember, did you used to have gateways in Ireland?
No, but like every teenager has like that hangout spot, didn't they?
Where was yours, my love? On the steps in Cork.
On what steps?
I don't know that.
No, outside Paul Street. If anyone's
outside
from
what
Cork,
street?
They'll know exactly what I'm on about. So there's like a Paul Street shopping centre and there was like...
Where you showed me?
Yeah, like it's kind of like I don't know, it's just like a pedestrianised area where like trees and stuff. It was basically where all the emos hung out, just like hung out there. Oh God, so embarrassing.
Mm. Well, yeah.
I think people still hang. But there used to be, like back then when emo was like a massive thing. Because I don't think it's a big thing anymore, is it? Not as much as it was when I grew up.
So, no.
Oh my God, like there used to be like hundreds of people, like hundreds of kids.
Mm.
Crazy.
Mm. So I think Gateway, it doesn't exist anymore in this country. So Gateway, the supermarket Gateway, doesn't exist anymore. I think it became Summerfield, and then I think Morrison's bought them out. But anyway, it was known as the local kind of teenage hangout. And then she was last seen near a chip shop in Watton sort of town centre. And she was heading towards, or in the direction of, Ryan, so the ex-boyfriend, Ryan's house. Now, we don't know whether she, you know, carried on, whether she got there or any, you know, as we'll see later, he wasn't in. So we don't know whether she kind of went there or even if she was heading there, she was just heading in that general direction. Why didn't she go home afterwards, you know? I mean, it was, I can remember all this time on, it was really cold that night. So we'll never know exactly. But now there's a podcast that we've got to credit here that is excellent, actually. It's called Unfinished. And it's in three parts, and you know you can get it wherever you get your podcasts. And it, you know, there's a lot of kind of in-depth information on this case. So I would recommend anyone listening to it. As Rachel already said, there's a retired police officer that mentions that about this kind of so-called subculture within Watton. And when the police go on to investigate this case, you know this. It says somewhere that, you know, hardened police officers were shocked by the behaviours of teenagers. I mean...
But isn't that in every...
Well...
Like, every...
Hardened police officers shocked by teenagers taking drugs and drinking. I mean, were they used to policing, you know, nuns or something? I mean, do you know what I mean, though? I find that a bit hard to... I don't know how hard they were.
I just think every generation, they all say the same thing, though.
Of course. I mean, I know this is 1992, isn't it? But, you know, it's not like... We're not talking like 1922, are we? You know, I'm sure... You know, it's not... I don't know why hardened police officers were, you know, shocked. The head teacher was interviewed on the Unfinished podcast, and she said, you know, Watton at the time and even today, you know, it was no better, no worse than any other similar place, you know. Yeah, there was kind of teenage drinking and possibly underage sex, but that's, you know, I'm afraid that's kind of always been. So Joanna, as I said, she was last seen outside this chip shop. Mum and Dad, they obviously went to bed, and I think they kind of presumed that due to the weather, I don't know why that would make a difference, but due to the weather that Joanna had stayed at boyfriend's, they didn't know they'd split up.
Strange though, do you not think? Going to bed with a 14-year-old out.
Well,
I'd be like really worried.
Yeah, I would. I mean, it's difficult because we, you know, it was only a small place. I mean, whether Joanna did this a lot, kind of stopped at mates and that. I know what you're saying. We would be worried. I mean, I think we need to be careful not to kind of, it's like kind of victim shaming almost the parents. But I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. And everyone's got different levels of...
Do the parents kind of... not know where she was then? I mean, unless she just said before she went out, oh, I'm going to so-and-so's house.
Well, I think Dad said that, don't be late. That was the kind of last thing he said. So Joanna didn't say, well, I'm not going to be late, Dad. I'm not coming back. So, you know, they weren't sure. And then I think as well, apparently Joanna and her sister Emma, they often went to parties to nearby Dereham, which I think is about, it's bigger than Watton. I think it's about 10 miles away. They went in the taxi and they said that, you know, can you drop us off further down the road? And then they used to kind of sneak in a bedroom window or, you know, a window of the house. But again, you know,
this child was wild at 14. I feel like I was so innocent.
I don't know about wild. I mean, we don't know what this party, you know, these parties were like. I mean, I'm sure they weren't like...
I don't think it was past the parcel, Neil.
I'm sure it wasn't past the parcel, but I think we need to be careful that, you know, I mean, obviously we don't know, do we? Obviously, Mum and Dad, you know, they didn't know that Joanna had split with Ryan a few days before, I think 2 or 3 days before. So they were kind of none the wiser about that. As far as we know, Mum and Dad went to bed. You know, I'm sure before they went to bed, they were probably thinking... Where's Joanna? I mean, this is days before mobile phone, isn't it? Well, the mobile phones did exist.
Yeah,
but I don't think a 14-year-old would...
Yeah.
Yeah. The kind of first kind of inkling, if you like, that they knew that they can, something's not quite right, or that certainly should not come back, was that Joanna's alarm went off at 6 a.m. She had a paper round, and she kind of got there. You know, she never missed. Never missed it. She's very reliable like that. So paper shop rang Mum and Dad at sort of just after 7 to ask, you know, where's Joanna? Because it was out of the ordinary, you know. And that's the first sort of like parents were, you know, right, okay, we don't know where she is. We're getting a bit, you know, kind of worried here. And obviously we knew Christmas Eve now. And then at some stage that day, they rang police and said that, you know, we don't know where she is. So obviously that Christmas was probably just... kind of cancelled.
Awful time to go missing.
Well, yeah, I mean, no time's good, is it? But Christ. And I think Mum's described on the Unfinished podcast that, you know, the feeling was just like in the pit of your stomach that, something, you know, something's not quite right. You hope that, but it's just that sense of doom. But they didn't know, you know, obviously at this time. Go on to Boxing Day, so obviously the 26th. About 8:30 in the evening. So the police were aware at this stage that, you know, she's missing. They're looking for her, making inquiries. There's a dog walker. He found Joanna's trainers, these like black trainers, and they were just like tidily put under a hedge.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, just very neatly. And then obviously he made, you know, he would have contacted the police, and then I think about 11 o'clock that night, the police found Joanna's body face down in a frozen pond. She was naked from the waist down. A pair of jeans that she was wearing, they were initially missing. They weren't there. Very strangely, I mean, we'll touch on this in a bit. They were found several days later, washed and ironed and thrown on a nearby hedge.
That is weird.
Joanna's underwear was kind of found in the immediate vicinity, but just kind of like strewn on the floor. So at that time, you know, I guess it's an assumption. I know you should never assume many things in life, but bear in mind, she was naked from the waist down. It's kind of a sexual
element.
So at a later post-mortem, it was determined that Joanna, she was actually quite possibly alive when she entered the water. But a cause of death was that she sustained a fractured skull and then been put in the water.
She might have been unconscious.
Yeah, that's yeah.
So like hit over the head, unconscious place.
Possibly. I mean, we'll... But they said that it was the fracture was consistent with a fall from kind of a stationary position onto the frozen ground.
So the Watton locals were understandably very fearful that some sort of sex attacker was on the loose. The police actually brought in about 30 detectives from outside of the immediate area, as they didn't have a big police presence in the area themselves. They took quite a vigorous approach from the start, which has been criticised by some. The police maintained that Joanna was murdered and gave absolutely no consideration, as far as we know, to possible manslaughter. And maybe doing so would have made it more likely for someone to have come forward, whether it was, you know, a culprit or somebody that had helped or just somebody that knew any information. It's easy to criticise in hindsight, but police at the time described it as basically a wall of silence in the town. So basically nobody came forward and gave any information.
Quite a small place, isn't it?
When it's tight-knit like that as well, it's... I don't know.
So the local taxi operator, the place that Joanna sometimes worked at, she actually said that one of these detectives that had been kind of bussed in from out of area actually wanted or suggested that their log of activity on the night that Joanna went missing, so the 23rd, may be incorrect, you know, and he's kind of said, he or she, the detective, are you sure? Are you sure it's not this? The taxi owner was no, you know, the logs are very accurate. You know, they might be a few minutes out, but there's no, you know, no.
Any CCTV in the area? Is it too? I don't know.
I think it's probably too early, isn't it? I think it's probably too early.
It's only 2 years old, so.
Yeah, I think it's probably too early, and also even if it CCTV was really kind of as it is now,
yeah,
probably an outlying town, you know. Probably small not. Town would it
I mean they're
be
crap
priority.
At the best of times now, never mind.
Well, although we aren't we most of the one of the most kind of CCTV places in the world, aren't we?
Britain? Are
we? I think so, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Think so, yeah. Per square mile or whatever, however they calculate that. Was it kind of a police deliberate attempt to at least fit, you know, the taxi log or the taxi operator's account of events? To fit the police's own narrative for what happened.
I mean, happen.
I mean, I'm saying...
They want to make sense of something.
I'm saying
they?
Apparently. The taxi operators wouldn't. They no, you know, this is what happened.
So on New Year's Eve 1992, a local newspaper received an anonymous postcard. On it were stick figures of a youth, a girl and a motorcycle, with the date, the 23rd of December 92, written on it, and that was obviously the day that Joanna disappeared. Witnesses came forward to say that a motorbike had been seen in the area on the 23rd. I guess the question is, you know, is Watton so small that a motorbike in the area was in any way remarkable?
I know that it's described Watton, certainly at that time, I don't know whether it is now, but it was kind of after... Actually, on the unfinished podcast, after 7 o'clock in the you know the PM, it was really nothing happened. It was just like dead,
really quiet.
Basically, yeah.
So maybe it was remarkable then.
Yeah, maybe.
Another witness saw a motorbike with a man, woman, or a girl at an entrance to the site where the body was found. So if that was Joanna, then obviously that's, you know, really significant.
I mean, we just don't know, do we? If that was, then it's very significant, isn't it?
I mean, is there times for these things, though?
Well, there's... You see,
obviously, that's the most important thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the times potentially tally up, but one of the witnesses...
Again, it depends on the time scale with the taxis and things.
Well, I mean, we're not privy to all the, you know, the details when the detectives apparently, allegedly, wanted to question the log from the taxi company.
Yeah.
We're not privy to what the police narrative was exactly. Of course we're not. Now, as regards a postcard, police used handwriting experts to try and kind of, you know, obviously decipher.
Have you seen the postcard, though? It's just...
Yeah, it's available on... Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
scribbled.
Yeah, I mean...
It's like a two-year-old.
Yeah.
Kind of... Isn't it like stick figure?
Yeah.
It's weird.
And this kind of handwriting expert, he sort of concluded that both both hands, left and right, were used to write it. Mm. So with an apparent attempt to throw police off the scent. I mean, as regards the sender, was it just someone
looking for pissing attention around?
Was it just someone? Yeah, yeah. Was it just
people
someone?
Do that though.
Yeah, just bored or whatever. You know, I mean, it could be, couldn't it? I mean, I remember telling you, Rachel, didn't I, about we used to ring up and me and my mates used to ring a random number in France.
And hello, hello.
And I said, well, this is what I said. So you'd ring France.
How did you, well, hello France. How did you get a number for France?
Well, we used to have, when we did French at school, we used to have these books called Tricolores. I don't know if they're still kind of, it was like a textbook. And so I'll give you friends. So, I mean, you know, anyone listening could go and do this now. I don't know if it's advisable. But, so you'd find out the area code, you know, in a Paris or whatever. And then you just kind of do like a random number. So we would do a number and then we would say, for instance, je voudrais une tranche de jambon.
Which means?
I would like a slice of ham, I think. Which I know doesn't sound at all.
No, I think that's hilarious.
Funny at all. But, you know, I grew up in quite a small place and long evenings to fill.
I don't think I would have had the balls to. Like, what age were you? Like, eight?
Eight? Oh, eight? No, oh. God, no. About 13 or something.
Or
je voudrais un paquet de biscotte.
And
then the woman, they'd be like, ow, 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 and put the phone down.
Idiot.
Anyway, so that's the messing around bit. Now,
how did we get onto that?
Well, I was just saying about, you know, did the person who sent this postcard, were they just pissing around? Was it just like, it's a bit of a sick, if it was.
Yeah, but kids are kids.
They are, but a young girl's been murdered. I mean, you know, I mean, I wouldn't even, you know, I wouldn't have done that, I don't think.
No,
Jesus
but
Christ.
Like, I remember, what age would I have been when the Twin Towers went down?
Mm.
And I remember them having a concept that people were actually dying and just thinking, oh, that's not funny, but, like, I didn't know what to think about it.
No, well, it's...
Do you know what I mean? At that age, you just don't have any concept of people around you.
So maybe it was someone messing around or some people
maybe
messing around.
Psychopath.
Maybe. You're bad, not mad. Maybe the killer or killers sent it. I don't know why they would send it. Playing with the police, just getting enjoyment out of messing around with the police. Maybe
things were so quiet, and if they're one of those killers that, like, enjoys watching, you know,
possibly
all the stuff in the news and all the kind of attention.
Yeah,
maybe
possibly
they want to get things going a bit.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that takes some balls, doesn't it?
No.
Not in a good way, but maybe somebody that knew the killer or had heard or, you know, sent it. They were too scared to kind of directly approach the police. I mean, as we've said, you know, it was a small town.
Do you think everyone knew everyone in that town?
There's probably
as
a big
well
element of that.
We're probably all bloody related.
I mean, it'd be very difficult to probably keep that secret. You know, who was it that went to the police, maybe? You know, so maybe someone was too scared. We just don't know. I mean, the police certainly had a theory that the motorbike was at least involved with or something to do with the disappearance and murder / manslaughter of Joanna. About 11 o'clock on New Year's Eve, actually, by which time, I think I was said earlier, the jeans have reappeared.
Washed and ironed.
Washed and ironed and just kind of chucked on a hedge, which,
See, that to me, again, is like, oh, things are going a bit slow. I want to add something into the mix to, like, see what happens next.
That's, yeah,
cause that
possibly.
Because that is really bizarre.
It is, isn't it? New Year's Eve, so obviously 31st of December, 92, 11 p.m. Chaps out with his dog. I mean, it's a bit of a late time to go out with your dog, isn't it?
It's not really. There's people around here that do it all the time. Dogs need walks.
Yeah, well, I think they were going down kind of this
creepy
path near to... Yeah. I mean, what made it more kind of raw around there, in Watton, it used to be a big RAF base, so an Air Force base as well, that shut some years ago, so it was kind of on the perimeter to the ex-RAF base. So, and obviously anyone that knows, you know, air base, there's a lot of greenery, isn't there? There's a lot of places where nothing happens, really.
Maybe he was going for a wank as well.
A walk?
A walk and a wank.
What, with his dog? That's worrying, isn't it?
I don't know, people are weird.
Get 5 years for that, probably, couldn't you?
What? Could you?
Well, I don't know, I've never looked into it, funnily enough. But he or she's saw, the dog walker saw, like a man, like in the kind of bushes, or, you know, certainly knew someone were there. They could hear the rustling and kind of running. Was that the killer returning to the site? I mean, that's often a thing, isn't it? Not just with Joanna's case, but often return.
Well, he's already returned once with these bloody jeans.
Well, the police believe that, well, the jeans, obviously that's one issue, but believe that he could well have returned several times because Joanna's body, it was in this kind of like, as we said, like a frozen ditch. And I think there'd been some kind of superficial half-arsed attempt to kind of cover the body up somewhat. So we think someone had returned. So it's pitch black on this little, this path. Dog walker couldn't kind of tell what was going off, basically. And the person that was there, you know, just kind of went.
So what, just like ran away then?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's pitch black. I think he or she describes that, you know, they could see the form of a person, you know, a human.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like a fox. No, it wasn't like a fox or something that would be out at that time, wouldn't it? So no, he certainly couldn't identify.
So there are several theories about what actually happened, and lots of different theories really being banded around. As regards the post-mortem, so this showed that there was a fracture of her skull consistent with a fall from a stationary object, which basically means she was what, like stood still?
Well, I think if a stationary object could be anything, couldn't it? Could be the chair we sat on now and fallen over. I mean, I think the thing is as well, it was shown, wasn't it, post-mortem, that she had kind of an abnormally thin, I don't know, there's probably a more medical term, but thin skull. And
she's got an awful thin skull on her.
She's got a thin skull, that lady. And it was a cold night, it was a freezing night. Now, this lane where she potentially could have fell, I think nowadays it's tarmacked over, but then it was stones with, you know, stony sort of path.
Yeah.
And so it was frozen as well.
So, I mean, did she fall off that motorbike, if she was on a motorbike at the end of the lane? And this was reported by a witness, wasn't it?
That there was two people at the end of this lane on a motorbike. Don't know if that was Joanna, of course.
Yeah, but it's an idea. So as we spoke about, she has a thin skull, apparently. I mean, did she fall onto that frozen stone path that could have caused the fracture? Did she fall accidentally, or was it, you know, was she pushed? And I guess as well, if she was with somebody and she fell and became unconscious, they think she was dead, they panic and kind of dump her in the pond. It's impossible to know. There were several graze marks and scratches on Joanna's body though, and these would be consistent with being dragged to the pond. However, there were also footprints on the lane leading to the pond. So it sounds like she did walk to the pond, whether voluntarily or not.
Well, she went down the lane. She didn't walk, the pond was so far from the lane, I think. So she actually went down this lane.
Okay.
I mean, did she, I guess it's kind of,
well, did she walk down the lane and then somebody drag her to the pond? It sounds like that.
Well, I think from the post-mortem, I think it's certainly evidence that, I think on the post-mortem, some of the stone, you know, little stones and that sadly went into Joanna's back, were found that, you know, it was the same kind of, I don't know what the word is, stone material or whatever that is from that specific area.
But it's like, who would have the motive to actually do this anyway?
Well,
you know what I mean? There's nobody really been identified as such that would have motive.
Well, in February 93, so this was, what, a couple of months after, prime suspect was arrested. He was a young local man. Many locals still believe that he did it. And the police were apparently really convinced that this is the one, this is the person, and it's murder. And, the, you know, it's not manslaughter, it's murder. But there wasn't enough evidential material, not enough evidence to charge. Now, apparently, immediately after Joanna went missing, so the 23rd of December, he or she was seen with scratches on his person. Now, he wasn't seen for kind of many days after. Then when he returned, the scratches had healed.
Why don't we know the name of this guy?
Well, the police do know.
And they've never released it.
And the retired police officer that was involved in the case that's on the Unfinished podcast, he mentions the name, but obviously the Unfinished podcast, it obviously bleeps the name out, of course. And he, I think he remains convinced. The scratches, there's a lot of kind of brambles bushes where Joanna's body was found. So, and there's a lot of scratches on Joanna's body as well.
Mm.
So kind of, you know, if, when Joanna's body was moved. Yeah, I mean, as I say today...
Is that literally the only piece of evidence they have?
Well, I don't know. We're not privy to that, are we? But what evidence they do have...
Clearly certainly isn't enough to...
With the CPS, yeah, it's obviously not enough to meet their threshold, is it? I mean, Ryan, the ex-boyfriend, was initially kind of the prime suspect. He's the ex-boyfriend. They've been together 6 months, unbeknown to anyone. Maybe Joanna's friends knew, I don't know. But unbeknown certainly to Joanna's mum and dad. They split a couple of days before. But Ryan had an alibi. He was out that night. And he was quickly cleared of that. I mean, there's a lot of...
It sounds more like chances are it was just an opportunistic murder.
Well, I think the police think that that Joanna knew the killer, who it was. I mean, was it... I mean, we could talk about this from now till tonight, couldn't we? What, did she just fall off? Was she sat on a motorbike? You know, well, let me sit on your motorbike, you know, with someone she knew, fell off, banged her head. Maybe the bloke panicked. I think he or she would certainly have had to get someone else to help her move the body.
Her person stuff were all...
Yeah.
That doesn't add up.
No, and there's a lot of... Well, maybe he was trying to kind of cloud the... make it into something that it wasn't, and I know it sounds... No,
it
doesn't.
Clever.
But there's no evidence.
Panicking, though,
there's no evidence of any sexual kind of assault, either pre or post death. But when I was looking on the internet researching, it's really... there's an article where it says that, you know, yes, she was raped, but she wasn't. She wasn't. There was no
like semen or anything.
No,
there was no sign of a struggle.
No, I mean, there were scratches on her.
But nothing like down below is what I'm
saying. No, not that anything that kind of we know. I mean, she'd been in the pond, hadn't she, if she was in there 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's cold, very cold, you know, so like found on the 26th, so 3 days. So any DNA evidence, or the DNA was in its kind of infancy then. I mean, it was only in about 5 years. But there was... I mean, we don't know what the police have got, but they certainly haven't got enough to charge this fella. Now, it was reopened. It's been reopened on anniversaries since. Mm. And two people were arrested, I think, in 2014.
Oh.
Like a 40-year-old and something else. And
that must be DNA.
Well, they were released. They were released. They weren't charged. I mean, the case remains open. And, you know, hopefully one day the offender or offenders are going to be caught, charged and jailed. I mean, the mum and dad still live locally. You know, why shouldn't they? It's where they live. It's where Joanna was brought up.
Must be awful not having that closure, though.
No. Yeah, you can't imagine, can you? You can't imagine. So, as we're in 2020 now, cold case, isn't it? Still remains open.
Aww.
So, that's, yeah, very sad. And that's the sad case of Joanna Young.
So, as always, thank you so much for listening. And a Happy New Year to everyone out there.
Happy New Year.
Yay, 2020.
Beautiful, Mella.
Thank you,
Mella.
As always, you can catch us on facebook.com/madorbad. You can catch us on Twitter @madorbad. And also, we have a Patreon account now, and that is patreon.com/madorbad. So you can go there and you can pledge. I'm not going to say a donation because it's not a donation. It's, you know, you're pledging money to
money, yeah.
To basically have exclusive content. So take a look, and if you're interested, please do support us. We really do appreciate it. So we will see you again in 2 weeks' time.
See you soon. Bye.